Okay, first matter up this morning is docket number 81346, Airbnb versus Rice. Counsel, you're ready to go. Do you want to reserve any time?
I would, please, Chief Justice Perigary. 4 minutes, please.
Okay.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Dawn Sestito, and I represent Airbnb, Inc. The issue before the court today is not who wins on the merits or who wins on the question of arbitrability. Instead, the narrow issue before this court today is who decides arbitrability. The United States Supreme Court has answered that question clearly more than once. Under Rent-A-Center and Henry Schein, when there is a valid arbitration agreement with a clear and unmistakable delegation clause, the court's role is limited and arbitrability must be determined by the arbitrator. So the first question is whether there is a valid arbitration agreement. Respondents here have conceded that there were. Eric Rice and Raheem Rice each created Airbnb accounts. They didn't just go to the website. They agreed to the terms of service. That concession is at page 288 of the record and discussed in their answering brief at pages 1 to 2. Those agreements contain an express and unambiguous delegation provision. It reads, if there is a dispute about whether this arbitration agreement can be enforced or applies to our dispute, you and Airbnb agree that the arbitrator will decide that issue. That's in the record at page 66. That language is clear and it is unmistakable.
Ms. Sestito?
Yes.
Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Okay. How do we even say they have a contract that relates here? They're neither a guest nor a host under the terms and conditions of the agreement. So why wouldn't we say, like Slaughter, like Moritz, and all the other California cases that have since interpreted Schein, they don't have a contract on that. And the state law is in a position to say they don't have a contract here on this. He certainly didn't have a contract for walking down the street. And he was not a host. I think that's agreed, and he was not a guest.
That's right.
So how do we even say that he agreed to arbitrate the dispute of walking down the street?
So the issue, Justice Stiglitz, is that the arbitrator is the party who's supposed to decide that, because that's what the terms of the contract say. So they are able to make all of those same arguments to the arbitrator, that this is outside of the scope, it has no relation, it doesn't apply to this dispute. So our position is that that is not an issue for the court to decide. It has to be delegated to the arbitrator. And if you look at a case like Henry Schein or Rent-A-Center, those cases are not looking at, there's no discussion, for example, in Henry Schein as to whether or not the dispute was related to the underlying agreement. And in that case, factually, it involved a distribution agreement, and then the claims involved antitrust claims. And there was no discussion from the court about whether or not those antitrust claims, what the tie of those antitrust claims were, what the conduct was that formed the basis of the antitrust claims, and whether that had any relationship to the distribution agreement. And in many cases, an antitrust claim would have nothing to do with an underlying contract or an underlying relationship between the parties. So if that was an important determination for the court, you would think that it would have been addressed. And instead, what Henry Schein says is, no, even if you think that the application of the arbitration provision, they use the term wholly groundless, but that's essentially the same, I think. I would submit, Justice Stiglitz, to what you're saying, right? It's wholly groundless to say that when you're walking down the street that has any relation whatsoever.
But Henry Schein remanded to the Fifth Circuit.
It did.
I'm sorry, the Fifth Circuit remanded Henry Schein. Correct? Or, I'm sorry, strike. It was Henry Schein was remanded so that the district court could determine more, right?
Yes, it was remanded so that there could be a determination as to whether there was a clear and unmistakable agreement to delegate. Because in that case, they didn't have express language like we have in our agreement. They had just incorporated the AAA rules. And the Supreme Court's not addressed that.
What express language do you have, though? How broadly or narrowly should we look at the issue of clearly and unmistakably intending to arbitrate arbitrability? Because narrowly, you would say, well, I'm agreeing when I sign up for this to arbitrate issues related to a violation of terms and conditions, and to allow the arbitrator to decide that arbitrability. But it seems here you're asking us to basically say anything in the universe that can occur in kind of some Orwellian fashion, you're agreeing to arbitrate it regardless, even as Justice Stiglitz was pointing out that this appears on its facts to be unrelated whatsoever to the terms and conditions of the agreement.
Yeah, so again, I think our position, I don't think it's unrelated, because if there's no relationship to the terms and conditions to the hosting platform, then there's no relationship to Airbnb at all. The respondents have said repeatedly that Raheem Rice didn't even know he was going to an Airbnb. So if there's no relationship with the terms of service, if there's no violation, right, their argument will have to be that Airbnb owed some duty. And if that duty doesn't arise somehow from this agreement, then there's no claim whatsoever. But that's all the merits, and those are things that the arbitrator is supposed to decide. And Henry Schein is very clear that that arbitrators are well suited to handle disputes, even where courts think that the application of the arbitration agreement, like I said, is wholly groundless, and they can quickly dispose of those. And that if the courts have to make distinctions between where something applies, whether it's within scope, whether it's not within scope, that swallows the rule of Henry Schein. And
so does it matter to your argument that, I mean, Schein is written in very broad terms.
Yes.
And we're applying federal law, so I take what you're saying. But it does strike me as anomalous that, and let's just take a simple hypothetical. I contract with someone to paint my house, mm-hmm. and we have a contract that says if we have a dispute about the work you do painting my house, we're going to arbitrate it, and the arbitrator will decide whether the dispute is arbitrable. We have a clear-cut delegation clause. Mm-hmm. But let's say we have that agreement, you paint my house, we don't have any argument about the job that was done with my house, but a month later, you run into me with your car, and I sue you. Mm-hmm. Would that then, because it's a dispute whether or not it's covered by the arbitration agreement, go to the arbitrator, even though it has no colorable relationship to, I mean, there's just no argument. I see your point about if they're going to sue Airbnb, then there must be some nexus that, you know.
Right.
But if there's no nexus at all, is it your point? Do you read Schein to go that far, to say that if the painter moves to compel arbitration, it goes to the arbitrator to decide whether or not him running over me with his car is arbitrable?
Justice Pickering, I do, because I think that was the whole point of the wholly groundless exception, is that courts were grappling with those circumstances where a dispute appeared to be wholly unrelated to the arbitration provision. And so some circuits developed law that said you have to enforce except if the argument of arbitrability is wholly groundless. And Henry Schein just flatly rejected that. And the holding... Yeah, it flatly rejected it. And the language in Henry Schein is incredibly, incredibly broad in terms of what is limited. You know, when the party's contract delegates the arbitrability question to an arbitrator, the court may not override the contract. In those circumstances, the court possesses no power to decide the arbitrability issue. This is true even if the court thinks the argument is wholly groundless.
And they're breaking arbitrability into two things: whether the parties have agreed to arbitrate, and second, whether their agreement covers a particular controversy. I mean, that's the language in Schein. So it strikes me that you do have to read it that far, but then that raises a question: is that outside the scope of the Federal Arbitration Act itself, which reaches agreements to arbitrate particular disputes?
Yes,
it's a puzzle.
It is a little bit of a puzzle. I think under Henry Schein, the question of whether it's arbitrable under the Federal Arbitration Act, the Section 2 argument, I think has to be decided by the arbitrator in a case like this. I think the two questions that Henry Schein left open for the court, one is there a valid agreement? And as I said, that's conceded here. The second is there a clear and unmistakable delegation? And in Henry Schein, they had to remand that issue because there was not language in the contract that delegated. They incorporated the AAA rules. And other courts had addressed that issue, but the lower court there didn't. And so the Supreme Court wasn't going to address that in the first instance.
But you don't have that. In 19.4, the last sentence is pretty point blank.
Exactly, exactly. So here, I think under any possible interpretation of what a clear and unmistakable delegation, we have it in 19.4, exactly. And
just out of curiosity, how does an Eric Rice, for instance, get out from under this as he moves forward through his life? What do they have to do in your mind to somehow get out from under being tied to forever arbitrate anything that they bring up relating to Airbnb?
Well, I think if Mr. Rice has a claim against Airbnb and Airbnb moves to compel based on the contract, it would get sent to arbitration for the arbitrator to determine in the first instance.
No, but I'm just saying, how would he ever get out from under that? What does he
how could he ever
do?
Break the contract?
He deletes the app. Is he still bound to arbitrate a dispute if he decides to sue in this kind of an instance later on?
I think the agreement that he signed would survive him deleting the app.
Okay.
But I think what
is it that makes that agreement somehow, at some point in the gentleman's lifetime, assuming he had lived, how do you get out from under that? Or can you ever? Or does it just exist in perpetuity for your life because you downloaded this app at one point and never used it?
Well, but in downloading he did more than download the app, right? He saw that the terms of service applied and agreed to them. So there was an express contract, and we all can enter contracts that then bind us for a long period of time. I think what would happen is that as you get further down, like the example that Justice Pickering gave, right? If you have something that is really truly unrelated, what happens is that just gets addressed at the second step. It's not that those arguments are waived. The question, as I said today, is just who decides them. So it's not that he would necessarily have to arbitrate every dispute he may have, but the person who makes that decision is the arbitrator, not the court.
So deleting the app in your mind doesn't get him out from under it. What does get him out from under this in some fashion throughout the rest of his life?
I would have to look more closely at the terms of service, Justice Herndon. I apologize that I don't have that offhand. But I think, as I said, many of us enter into contracts all the time. I mean, in the Bossie case, for example, that we cited, the First Circuit case, that was a case where somebody had signed an employment contract many years ago, had several subsequent contracts, and arbitrability was enforced in that case, even though that contract was no longer operative. So I don't think it's uncommon to have arbitration provisions that exceed the life of the contract.
I was going to ask if there's anything in the record about what's happened in light of Schein and its predecessor, Rent-A-Center, in terms of our cases, you know, going to arbitrators. Are arbitrators sometimes saying, yeah, this is beyond the scope of the arbitration agreement, go back to court? Is there anything in the record that we could look at about what's happening?
I don't know, Justice Kadish, whether there's something specific in terms of like a study that really discusses like how many times are arbitrators finding arbitrability or not.
Are they just looking at this and saying, no, it's not within the scope of the agreement, go back to court?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that there are cases in several that we cited, including one that I think is particularly relevant, the D.C. Circuit Communication Workers of America case, where that's at 6F4-1349, where Chief Judge Srinivasan of the D.C. Circuit said that, so this is a post-Schein case, and this was the D.C. Circuit's interpretation of it. Once the party subjects some set of issues to an arbitrator for resolution, and once the party's clearly and unmistakably assigned to an arbitrator the authority to decide whether disputes fit within that set of issues, the question of whether a particular dispute is arbitrable is strictly for the arbitrator, not a court. So some courts have been applying it quite strictly, although, of course, I concede that some, you know, like Moritz in California did not.
So Moritz, its progeny, Slaughter, you say wrongly decided at some point that's going to get cleaned up. That's your position.
That is my position. I think there were some other differences. In Moritz, you know, Universal was taking the position that there was no valid agreement. But
Slaughter's right on point.
But trying to apply, you know. But yes, I do think if you look at Henry Schein, they read something into Henry Schein that I think is not there. Henry Schein is not deciding whether those antitrust claims, there's no discussion in Henry Schein, do these antitrust claims have any relationship to the arbitration agreement? They're not comparing the language. of the antitrust claims to the arbitration agreement or the underlying contract or even the underlying relationship. And so if that is a core holding, you would think that would have been discussed.
So can I ask you?
Yes.
I hate to chew up your time, but not really, because I really want to know. I want to talk to you. So let's take the hypo here where, and forget Airbnb, because it's just trickier. Let's just say the plumber. Mm-hmm. I've hired the plumber, and we've contracted to fix my plumbing. I have a separate that has an arbitration clause. Mm-hmm. I have a separate contract with the plumber to fix my car. Okay? Messes up my car. Do I have to go to arbitration? That's my question to you.
So I think the question depends on, is it a valid arbitration agreement, and does it include an express delegation clause?
Say it is. This plumbing my house has got a separate delegation clause, all good. But we've made a written contract for my car that does not include such a clause. You mess up my car, I sue, the plumber says, hey, we've got to arbitrate. What do you think?
I think the answer is yes. It would have to go to the arbitrator to decide the arbitrability question. Okay. And then those issues get raised before the arbitrator. That's actually what happened in Bossie. Those are like almost the exact facts in Bossie.
Okay, and because Justice Stiglitz chewed up all your rebuttal time, I'm going to give you 2 minutes and offer Mr. Henry out the same.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Joel Henry out on behalf of the plaintiffs, the estate of Raheem Rice and his father, the heir, Eric Rice. The language in Henry Schein certainly is very broad, but I don't think that means that it needs to be read outside of the context of its facts, where the relationship to the contractual dispute was never in question. There, the reason that arbitrability was ever in question was solely because the claims included injunctive relief.
But if you're looking at the claims and whether that injunctive relief is inside or outside the arbitration clause, aren't you deciding the arbitrability question?
And I understand the issue of going down that rabbit hole if you even embark down the path of looking at what might possibly be arbitrable. But I think courts have a responsibility to avoid going to an absurd position in order to avoid that complexity, if possible.
Does that overtake our obligation to follow what the U.S. Supreme Court said?
No.
Okay.
No. Respectfully, I don't think it does.
Mr. Henrod, I mean, isn't that exactly what Schein says? Schein says if you're going to determine the scope, it goes to the arbitrator. I mean, that's what you're asking or wanting us to do, is to make a determination in all these hypotheticals, what's the scope?
Well, let's jump to it, since we only have a few minutes, and I'll cut right to the crux. Where Henry Schein leaves off is what exactly have the parties contracted to delegate to the arbitrator when it comes to determining arbitrability. So then we look at the text of that delegation clause. Here, what was the text of this delegation clause? This delegation clause, and Airbnb, I think, gives the court an opportunity with its simplicity. It is taking the most extreme position, I think, is conceivable on this type of an issue. They're saying if you have ever agreed to any kind of a delegation clause in any kind of an agreement with them forever, you agree to have an arbitrator dispute anything you may ever have in the future. But what you have to do is actually look at the text of that arbitration clause. Here, it said, if there is a dispute about whether the arbitration agreement, capital A for arbitration, capital A for agreement, defined clause. This is in the delegation clause. Can be enforced or applies to our dispute, also capitalized, also a defined term, and you and Airbnb agree that the arbitrator will decide that issue. So here, what it's doing is it is incorporating the terms of the arbitration agreement. It is incorporating the concept of dispute as set out in the arbitration clause.
So we should look at the whole agreement to decide if this is actually covered by the arbitration provision.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because it incorporates the arbitration provision. They rely heavily on the case out of the Fifth Circuit, Bossie versus New York Life Insurance Policy, which is a Bossie, a case name I love for an employment case. And there, as in Shine, there was a nexus. It all involved employment, and the court emphasizes how long that employment relationship had been, and this had been a part of that. But let me jump to the crux of this issue. There, as the Fifth Circuit decides, they look at the text of that delegation clause. And they notice that the delegation clause incorporates the terms of the arbitration clause, including the defined term claim. And there, the defined term in the arbitration clause, such claims, included any dispute, claim, or controversy arising between them. It wasn't even limited to those things arising out of or relating to the use of the platform or arising out of or relating to the agreement. It was very, very broad. Here, the defined term dispute relates to the arbitration clause. That does limit the arbitration clause to those things that arise out of or relate to the terms. So, as the court is considering the delegation clause, do you enforce the delegation clause? Well, what you have to look at is what did the parties envision? What would they objectively have envisioned when they agreed to this delegation clause? That is a matter of straight contract interpretation. It is in line with Henry Schein. And it is no different than any other contract interpretation question the court occasionally has to resolve. Here, somebody looking at this delegation clause says, I agree to arbitrate. I agree to have an arbitrator decide what's arbitrable when. When we're talking about this kind of a dispute, capital D defined term, dispute.
But isn't that circular reasoning? We only agreed to have the arbitrator decide if it's arbitrable, if it's arbitrable? Like, you see what I'm saying?
Not really. Okay. Because it incorporates, and this is the logic of the Fifth Circuit, too, a case they rely on heavily. Because the delegation clause does incorporate the terms of that arbitration clause, then some aspect of looking at what might conceivably be arbitrable is involved in enforcing the delegation clause. I don't think that would always be the case. we set it out in our briefs that I think it should be the case, based on an interpretation, a reasonable interpretation of the FAA. But even if you look at this as a straight contract analysis, when one incorporates the other, then notwithstanding Henry Schein, in order to enforce delegation, yes, you do have to look at the arbitration clause and what conceivably might have been within it, because the parties, when they contracted, referred to it.
So what part of that delegation clause you think requires us to look at the scope of that then?
Well, what did they agree to do? If there is a dispute about whether this arbitration agreement can be enforced or applies to our dispute,
right,
you and Airbnb agree that the arbitrator will decide that issue. So then you have to look
But you have that dispute here.
What's that?
You have that lower, small d dispute here.
Yes, we have a dispute, but not capital letter D.
Yeah. Where is the capital D dispute defined?
That is in the arbitration clause itself. You and Airbnb mutually agree that any dispute, claim, or controversy arising out of or relating to these terms or the breach, termination, enforcement, or interpretation thereof, or to the use of the Airbnb platform, the host services, the group payment service, or the collective content, collectively, comma, quote, disputes, will be settled by binding arbitration.
Aren't they suing Airbnb because the home was rented through the Airbnb platform?
I think that is one way of construing the claims. The nature of the claims itself has not been litigated. and here we have a broader negligence claim.
These poor folks who, you know, this gentleman got shot, right? Obviously, we're sympathetic all to the circumstances that happened. But the reason that the lawsuit is not just naming someone who actually shot him or the person who rented the house and hosted the party, the reason Airbnb is being sued is because the house was rented through Airbnb's platform. Is that generally true?
Generally.
That is accurate.
And I don't think it is limited to that theory, but I think it would be included. I think that would be included. But to determine whether or not that was arbitrable, the court would have to find that this delegation clause is clear and unmistakable evidence that the parties contemplated that it conceivably might be. Let's go to the Fifth Circuit case, Bossie. It really did matter that the language there was much broader. There, the delegation clause was referred and incorporated an arbitration clause that was so broad that included any dispute, claim, or controversy arising between them. It didn't need to arise from or relate to anything in particular. The Fifth Circuit, the majority in the Fifth Circuit, and there was a dissenting opinion, but the majority in the Fifth Circuit found that meaningful as a matter of contract interpretation. Expressio unius est exclusio alteris, or as my partner Dan would say, expressio some things, exclusio everything else. If you are saying we're going to delegate those things arising from or relating to, and then you give a list, that is very different from the clause that was at issue in the Bossie case. And it was meaningful to the Fifth Circuit that the language in Bossie was so broad.
But I want to return to the lower case D in the second sentence or the last sentence in 19.4. If there is a lowercase dispute, small d, about whether this capital arbitration agreement can be enforced or applies to our capital D dispute. So we do have a dispute, and I share Justice Kadish's struggle trying to see how Airbnb comes in and what is the theory of liability against Airbnb in this case. And But isn't there a dispute over whether this agreement applies to the larger dispute? I mean, and I don't know why they put that in lowercase, but it seems to me it fits under Shine literally read. I mean, and that's a problem because we are. I appreciate your contract point, and that's what I was trying to get at with the hypothetical of the guy who paints my house and then hits me with his car. It seems to me wrong to say that I would have to arbitrate the latter because it's completely unrelated to the subject matter of the contract that gives rise to the arbitration clause, and that seems like giving too much to the FAA. But what do we do with the language in Shine that says, look, the arbitrator can make the decision, and the arbitrator is as capable as the court of saying this agreement doesn't apply to this claim because this man was injured outside a party house and you rented the party house under, you know, without investigating it, or I don't know what the theory is, but that it's wholly unrelated to the fact the guy downloaded the app. But why? But Kavanaugh and Schein write so broadly, and he seems to say that goes to the arbitrator. The arbitrator's not shy about saying, get thee back to court, and here's some sanctions against you for having, you know, brought a frivolous motion to compel and ended up before us with it. Now, whether arbitrators will do that, I don't know. I have no knowledge of that. But can you address the lowercase d? I'm sorry to take
right,
up so
right.
much
well,
of your time.
No. I appreciate the question, and I understand the allure of the systemic simplicity of that broad language and how construed as broadly as possible and applied as simply as possible, it would avoid difficult questions. I think Schein can be read. I think Schein ought to be read to harmonize with the necessity of construing narrowly the delegation clause, or at least reading it rigorously to see what the parties actually contracted for, even just in terms of the delegation, clearly and unmistakably. I think that is completely consistent with Henry Schein.
Did the wholly groundless line of cases that produced the split that led to Schein, did they include the argument you're making that this contract, you know, that it's outside the pale of, it's a wholly groundless argument. Is that one of the categories that those cases were reaching?
So, is the question whether or not clearly and unmistakable that concept applies only to cases where there is no delegation clause? Is that
no.
what the question is?
No. Whether the wholly groundless line of cases was saying that the connection between this dispute and the arbitration agreement is so far attenuated that the arbitration agreement and its delegation clause could not, under any circumstances, be read to cover this. Therefore, your argument for arbitration is wholly groundless. Did those cases reach that concept?
Not that I'm aware. And I think it is clear that Justice Kavanaugh, as he was writing it, didn't include that because it left it completely aside.
Yeah.
Because it said, we take no position on whether or not the parties did clearly and unmistakably agree to delegate this dispute. All Henry Schein is saying is that if the only reason for wholly groundless is that it wouldn't be arbitrable, then we don't want the district court, we don't want the courts deciding that. But it didn't take a position on how the delegation clause is interpreted in and of itself. And that is what the court needs to look at. There is no reason under Henry Schein where the court can avoid construing that.
I'd like to test that argument, Mr. Henry. Okay. I don't see where in the FAA Justice Kavanaugh gets the language of wholly groundless. And quite frankly, it is frustrating to go through this mental exercise in the way in which I think the Supreme Court has approached the FAA and interpreted it. That aside, it seems to me inconsistent to say that we would defer to the courts to determine what is delegable or what the delegation clause says, but not to defer to the courts to determine whether this dispute is the subject of arbitration. And I think it's pretty clear that that's how they've interpreted or approached the FAA, that if you've got a contract, it includes a delegation clause, the court is to stay out of it, let the arbitrator decide whether it's arbitrable, and if it isn't, then it's the arbitrator who's interpreting the delegation clause, not the court. What do you say about that? And the second question I have is, if you're going to write around what Schein has said, how would you propose this court author that? Because probably like Kentucky and some other states, I would suspect that if we deviate from this alluring, simplistic approach, as you have characterized it, we're going to find that we're going to be the subject of some opinion by Justice Kavanaugh or somebody else who decides to slap down the state for not following its FAA jurisprudence.
So on the wholly groundless, there what the Supreme Court is saying is that wholly groundless doesn't appear in the statute, and because it doesn't appear in the statute, then the district court can't consider it. and I think that especially broadly read, the decision can be construed to reach even the absurd. And I don't think that wholly groundless is tantamount to absurd. I do think that's a meaningful line. and I think Henry Schein still says, okay, but if we're going to rely on arbitrators and we're going to defer to them and we're going to trust them because the party disagreed to send it to an arbitrator, then the court is not saying that you should not look seriously at whether or not the parties did do that. And it's got to be clear and unmistakable what that delegation to the arbitrator is. I think the California Court of Appeals now in several cases has set out the map. This case, I think this court could adopt the rationale in Bossie, and the result here would be affirmance. Because in Bossie, the case that they rely on so heavily, the court still looks at the specific language of that delegation clause. What would a delegation clause, to be fair, I mean, to actually indicate parties' intent, what would it have to say? What would this have had to say? By clicking agree, you agree that any dispute you may ever have with this company for the rest of your life, whether arising from or relating to this agreement or anything else, whether you use it or somebody else uses it, no matter how your case relates to us or does not, you agree that everything in the future will be delegated to an arbitrator. Now, I don't think that would be legal. I think it would be oppressive. I think it would be oppressive. I think it would be unconscionable. Or,
well, it would be absurd for a delegation clause to be broader than the actual arbitration clause. That's the point of the whole thing.
Well, that too. But at least that would clearly and unmistakably reflect a meeting of the minds that they are suggesting in terms of the agreement to the delegation clause. But here, you don't have that, and you have something in between. You don't even have the simplicity that you had in Bossie, where it just said everything.
If we have to decide whether this dispute is within the scope of the first sentence of 19.4, then what is the sentence in question? Why is it even there, and what's its meaning? Because there would never be a circumstance for the arbitrator to decide whether it's within the scope of the arbitration clause, because the court would effectively be already deciding that.
I think there's a difference between inside of it and within the ballpark of it being comprehensible. And Henry Schein, right? Again, we're looking at the relief. In Bossie, we are looking at an employment or contractor relationship for a long time. Here, where the district court talks about this being a wrongful death case, I think charitably construing what Judge Sturman was saying is that this isn't even in the ballpark of what might conceivably be arbitrable.
Which has been soundly rejected by U.S. Supreme Court unanimously?
I do not think that wholly groundless means absurd. And I think that's what the California Court of Appeals makes out. If the analysis were really that simple, Bossie could have been 10% of the length that it was. The Fifth Circuit didn't stop there, and the court's inquiry ought not. Thank you.
So just a couple of very quick points. So first, following up on counsel was very hesitant to agree that the booking of the house on Airbnb's platform was the reason why they're in the suit. But let's be honest, if the house had not been booked on Airbnb's platform, Airbnb would not be a defendant in the case. They didn't sue VRBO, right? They didn't sue just a random platform that does this. They sued the one that the house was booked under. So clearly there is some relationship. But again, that's not a decision for this court to make. That's for the arbitrator to make. And I want to also point out, there's been a lot of discussion about Henry Schein. Henry Schein actually defines what the wholly groundless exception was. So Justice Kavanaugh wrote that some courts short-circuit the process, and this is a quote, if the argument that the arbitration agreement applies to a particular dispute is wholly groundless. That's exactly what we have here. They're saying we have a dispute, and it's lowercase d in that last sentence of 19.4. We have a lowercase d dispute about whether this arbitration agreement applies to the matter here. That has to be under Henry Schein delegated. And it's not just Henry Schein, it's also Rent-A-Center, which years before Henry Schein found that if you have a delegation clause, that's just an antecedent agreement that you have to address first. That's the only dispute now. That clearly arises out of the terms, out of 19.4. And then one last thing, Justice Stiglitz, to respond to your question about Slaughter. That was a district of a D.C. Circuit case. So I would say that I think Communication Workers of America, which is a D.C. Circuit case which came after, may call some of that into question. But also that case involved multiple agreements that were in conflict that couldn't be like reconciled, right? So one agreement said it had to be arbitrated. One said it had to be, there was exclusive jurisdiction in the district court. So factually it was a little bit different than this case. But I think here, even under Bossie, we have a lowercase d dispute that has to be decided by the arbitrator. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, counsel, for the briefing and arguments in the case. The matter will stand submitted.